I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Kevin Gorman here with you on the Paul Zeiss Show. Paul's got the night off to see his son Elijah play for the Chargers. He's trying to make that team, the former Pitt linebacker. So I'm filling in here for the next 4 hours. And, you know, I came in here wanting to talk about the Pirates and Steelers and to listen to Andrew Filippone on the PM team. It really brought up this question, which makes you cringe more? The idea of the type of surgery that Filippone is going to undergo, or that the Pirates spent January at Pirates Fest talking about the World Series? Which makes you cringe more? Because right now, the idea that the Pirates, a team that is 18 games under 500, for the first time since the final game, the final day of the 2011 season, I believe that was Clint Hurdle's first season with the Bucks. They're amid a five-game losing streak and have lost 21 of 25 since the All-Star break. This is a team that went into the All-Star break with 2.5 games out of both the National League Central and the wild card race. And the Pirates are so far out of it now that they've kind of, I guess you could say they've waved the white flag. And it, which is really a shame in the sense that the big news of the day for the Bucks is that, according to reports by Jason Mackey, the Post-Gazette, and confirmed by Adam Berry of MLB.com, is that Mitch Keller will be coming back up to join the rotation. And this is one of those things where the Pirates really couldn't have botched Mitch Keller's major league debut and his spot starts this season any worse than they did, in my estimation, that this is the guy that people were supposed to be get excited about. Excited about in the same sense that they would have been when Gerrit Cole made his major league debut, when Jameson Taillon made his debut, and when Chris Archer made his debut for the Bucks after the trade deadline deal last year. That's how Mitch Keller should have been received in Pittsburgh, as the number one pitching prospect and number one overall prospect in the organization. And I go back and I looked this up as we were waiting to come on air here. Back on January 26th at Pirates Fest, this was my column. Just when the January weather had turned frigid and fatigue was starting to set in on the Pittsburgh Steelers and the daily dose of Antonio Brown's antics, the Pirates provided a delicious diversion. They're going to win the World Series. Nothing compares to the optimism of the offseason. The Pirates are coming off an 82-win season and return one of the best starting young rotations in baseball. And, well, did I mention the 82 wins? And here's the quote from Frank Coonley, the Pirates president. Trust me, nobody is pleased, satisfied, or happy with 82 wins last year. It does, in my view, represent a move in the right direction, but it's not nearly enough. 82 wins will not get you in the postseason. We need at least 10 to 12 more wins to get where we need to be. It's too damn long, 40 years. Nobody is satisfied with 82 wins in the organization. Everybody is committed to doing what we can to putting a World Series championship team on the field, and we do know that we can do it. And here the Pirates are in early August, on pace for a 68-win season, 14 games back from last year's finish. Nowhere near the World Series, nowhere near the playoffs, nowhere near the division title, something they haven't won since moving to the NL Central. And you would have to imagine that heads are going to roll. You would have to imagine that somebody's going to pay the price for this. And we can start at the bottom and start with, let's find a position coach and pin the blame on him. And the easy target would be Ray Searidge. You could blame it on the manager. Last year they pinned it on the position coach. They fired Jeff Branson, the batting coach, and brought in new hitting coaches, and that obviously made an impact. So you could pin it on Ray Searidge, but I don't know that you're going to do a whole lot better than Ray Searidge in terms of an individual pitching coach. Perhaps you get some new, fresh ideas in there, but in terms of a guy who's proven, Ray Searidge is. You can pin it on him, or you can pin it on Clint Hurdle, the manager, who's really in charge of this mess. But Clint Hurdle is managing players that have been provided to him by Neil Huntington, and this is a team that has been decimated by injuries. It's been decimated by, in some instances, trades. Trades that didn't work out, like Lonnie Chisenhall, trades that were made to try to get some value out of a player like Corey Dickerson. you know, the injuries to not only Jameson Taillon, but some of the other starting pitchers, some of the relievers that have been lost for spells to the injured list or for the entire season. The injuries to Gregory Polanco, starting Marte for a short stretch, Eric Gonzalez, guys, you know, and guys that didn't pan out, guys like Jung Ho Gung. You know, Jordan Lowes was a solution for the first half of the season. Second half of the season, they found him expendable. At least they got something in return for Jordan Lowes. But, you know, you could go further up the chain and you could blame this on Neil Huntington for making those moves or not making enough moves to support his ball club, the major league club. You could put it on above him at Frank Coonerly and saying he's the guy that's in charge of overseeing Neil Huntington. He's the guy in charge of the payroll and the budget. You could put it above Frank Coonerly even at Bob Nutting as a guy who has shown that he's not willing to spend, that he doesn't believe that it's payroll is commensurate with being victorious, that spending is going to be a way to win the World Series, that he wants to do it with the Pirates' philosophy, and the Pirates' philosophy has fallen flat on its face. I think they should all be held accountable. And I think at some point somebody above Ray Searidge is going to have to pay for this. Ray Searidge may be gone. He may be the fall guy just because the Pirates need a new voice. Maybe they need to have somebody who, somebody from the outside come in and help resurrect some of the players in the way that Searidge has done in the past. But I think if you're looking at Ray Searidge to pin this entire season on him, especially a guy who's had to deal with losing his ace in Jameson Taillon, losing four out of the five starters to the injured list at some point this season, losing his setup man in Keone Keller for a good portion of the season, losing Nick Birdie, a guy who impressed coming out of spring training, losing both of his long relievers to the starting rotation, and then one of them, Nick Kingham, being designated for assignment and traded to the Blue Jays. There's a lot of different things that you can pin on Ray Searidge, but this is a guy who was thrown, he wasn't given Dallas Keuchel and told to win with him. He was given Jeff Hartlieb and Alex McRae and Montana DeRapo. He did what he could with a bunch of kids who probably have shown more than anything that they don't belong in the major leagues right now or that they're not bona fide major league pitchers. There's a lot of things that we can pin on the Pirates. Want to hear your thoughts. Who is to blame? Who deserves to go? Who deserves to stay? At this point, you know, at the trade deadline, I was saying at the All-Star break that the Pirates should keep this team intact and see how it can do, that they weren't going to get much trade value, and I was correct. They weren't going to get much trade value trading the players with expiring contracts. Jordan Lowes brought back a double-A pitcher. Corey Dickerson brought back $250,000 in international pool money, and that's half as much as they got for Andrew McCutchen in terms of the international money, and he brought back a player to be named. And so, you know, the Pirates could have kept this team intact. Moving Dickerson, at least they got something in return, and they cleared room for Brian Reynolds to play in left field, which is looks like he's going to be your everyday left fielder moving forward. But by the trade deadline, you know, the hope was that the Pirates would either make a major deal involving Felipe Vasquez and get something major in return, or that they would hold on to him and make some deals in the offseason. I'm at the point now where I don't think there should be anybody off limits, and that includes Josh Bell, which is a complete reversal from where I was about a month ago, that Josh Bell should be a guy that if somebody makes the Pirates the right offer, because now Josh Bell is no longer a major bargain when he's going to go through arbitration for the first time and get paid. He's still a bargain, but he's not the bargain that he was this season. And, you know, you look at starting Marte, he's probably the Pirates' best overall player, but there is a lack of leadership on this team, and he should be the guy that should be the leader, whether it's by his words or his actions, examples. I want to know what you think. Give us a call, 412-928-9370. Let's get your thoughts on what's wrong with the Bucks and how to fix them if you think that that's possible. Let's start with Tim in the car. Hey, Tim, thanks for calling the Fan. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, Kevin. First of all, I thought your synopsis of the Pirates was excellent. You make great points, and it's hard to argue with any of them. And I don't have all the answers. I don't think anybody does. But I'm extremely disappointed in the Pirates. I think their major failing is pitching. I don't think they have a great pitching staff, no matter how you stack it up. You can say that they won the first month of the year, first month and a half with great pitching. Their pitchers, I think, are all average at best. Taillon, of course, we're not sure what's going to happen with him. He's probably gone for a year. And then Trevor Williams is reverting back to form. He had pitched some great outings in it, like last night. It was a bad outing. Their relief pitching is bad. You've already mentioned all of that. But the things that concern me are the Pirates' farm system. I don't know specifically, not like you do, of who's coming up that are pitching prospects besides Mitch Keller. There may be one or two, but it doesn't sound like their farm system is stacked up very well in regards to pitching. So I think pitching is the most important thing on the Pirates. Number two, I would like to ask you, I don't know why they don't start Jose Osuna at any particular position and play him every day instead of playing him one a week or 2 days a week or whatever. He has the highest slugging percentage on the team. He's done this fairly well for the last three seasons that I'm aware of. He's an excellent defensive guy, even though he made an error last night. That was only his second error of the year, although he hasn't played that much. And I can remember when he played left field and had three putouts on his own by virtue of his strong arm. And so I think his bat is very good. He already has eight home runs and very limited experience. Why couldn't he be a 20 to 30 home run guy if he played every day?
Tim, let me get to that one real quick, and then we have to go to a break. But when it comes to Jose Osuna, that the position that he's best suited for is first base, and that's blocked by Josh Bell, who's been the Pirates' best slugger for the majority of the season. The post All Star break being the exception is, you know, that he's gone into this major slump here. But that's why Jose Osuna hasn't played more. That he's still very raw at third base, and he's not. I don't think the Pirates feel like he covers very much ground playing left field at PNC Park. So he's not going to play left field. That puts him in right field. So he's essentially a guy who's going to play some at first, some at third, and some in right field, especially when he's at PNC Park. And, I think the Pirates are going to have to make a decision on Jose Osuna. And the decision might be that, you know, unless they're moving Josh Bell, that this is a guy who's probably maybe better suited for another club. But, you know, perhaps they do that to audition him. We'll get to all your calls more and more. It's the Paul Zeiss Show, 93.7 The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.